And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Does the CIA lie to Congress? Did the CIA lie to Congress? Or deceive Congress? Or misinform Congress? Or simply fail to tell Congress what was going on with covert operations, either in the Bush years or under Obama's presidency? It's an important question. Whether or not you support covert operations, I would hope you would agree with me that they need to be within the law, that we need to have oversight, that we can't go back to the 1980s when you had a president, in that case Ronald Reagan, direct a rogue CIA operative, in that case Ollie North, directing him to sell arms to our enemies, in this case it was Iran, in return for American hostages, and then trade that money received to the Contras in Nicaragua, who were barred by law from receiving American aid. The CIA has long had a lawless past, the FBI as well, famously doing covert operations without informing Congress, everything from the bombing of Cambodia during Vietnam to the FBI spying on Martin Luther King. But the Church Commission, led by Senator Frank Church of Idaho, Democrat in the 1970s, set up laws to make sure that Congress would have oversight over the CIA. Have those laws been successful? Well, recently, when Nancy Pelosi was complaining about some of the torture that was conducted by the Bush administration and other covert activities, there was pushback from the Republicans. They said, well, Nancy Pelosi, you knew all about this. If you had a problem, you should have complained then. Should she have complained then? How could she have complained then? Was she fully informed? Nancy Pelosi said, I was not fully informed. The CIA did not tell me everything. They deceived me. And the Republicans, and frankly at that time, the director of the CIA, the new director, Leon Panetta, appointed by President Obama, pushed back and said, what do you mean they lied to you? What do you mean they misinformed you? Of course they informed you. Well, Leon Panetta, the director of the CIA, learned just a month ago that he was misinformed. He'd been in office March, April, May, June, more than 4 months, and was never told of another secret plan, which the law required Congress be informed about, this one about assassination of al-Qaeda leaders and operatives. Now, I don't really have a problem with assassination of al-Qaeda leaders and operatives. I really don't. But I do believe in the rule of law. And I do believe that without the rule of law, without congressional oversight, far worse things than that can happen. Things like torture, things like holding people indefinitely, things like sending people to secret prisons to be tortured. If we believe it should happen, then Americans should elect members of Congress who vote on it. And if something has to be kept secret from Americans, but we have congressional oversight by both parties, I'm okay with that. But do we? Do we have sufficient congressional oversight? Does the CIA lie to Congress? Is further investigation warranted? To answer these questions, I've invited a member of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, Congressman Rush Holt of New Jersey. Now, Congressman Holt is one of my favorite congressmen. He has been for some time. He's most famous, probably, for his voting rights bill, a bill that would require a verified paper record of all votes to prevent things like machines cheating people, Diebold, falsely electing the wrong person, and so forth. And although his bill has yet to pass Congress, he has achieved much of what he seeks at the state level. About two-thirds of the states now require a voter-verified paper record. I'll ask him a little bit about that, but mostly I want to talk with him about intelligence. What members of Congress know, when do they know it, what should they know, what are the legal requirements for knowledge? And Congressman Holt is an extremely well-informed, intelligent guest, and he's one of the few members of Congress with a PhD. It's really nice to interview a member of Congress who can answer some very tough questions. Congressman Rush Holt, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Good to be with you, Mark.
Now, you are a member of the House Intelligence Committee. Intelligence has gotten quite a lot of attention lately, particularly with the disclosure by the CIA head, Leon Panetta, regarding a secret plan that occurred back in 01 or 02 that Congress wasn't informed about. It's been reported in the press, I don't expect you to confirm this, but it's reported in the press that it has to do with the assassination of Al-Qaeda leaders. My question for you is hopefully something you can talk about, which is, when is Congress required to be informed about the administration's intelligence plans, and why weren't you informed in this case?
Good question. First of all, let me say you're right. I serve on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. I also chair a separate committee, which is known as the Select Intelligence Oversight Panel. This is a new creation in the 110th Congress, so 2.5 years ago, in response to the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, which thought that there should be better coordination between the authorizing and appropriating committees, and Congress should use the clout of the appropriations to get more responsiveness, better reporting, and cooperation from the intelligence community so that Congress could exert more oversight. So oversight is really what's been on my mind, for a number of years now. But really, it's a responsibility of mine now, and it is made very hard by the fact that, at best, the CIA regards their responsibility to Congress as notification. So I'm glad you didn't use that word notification, because it sounds perfunctory and one-way, one-directional. In fact, what the law says is that for any covert action, undertaken or contemplated, anticipated, Congress must be kept fully and currently informed. I mean, that's the law. Yep. And they should want that, because you should want oversight. Whenever you're doing anything this important and this fraught with opportunities for mistakes and big, whopping mistakes, you should want oversight. I mean, you do a better job when you have to justify what you're doing to someone else.
Now, Congresswoman Harman has written in the Los Angeles Times regarding her time from 2003 to 2006, where she was the ranking member, which would be the highest Democrat on the Intelligence Committee. And she said that she went into these information sessions,
whatever you want to call them.
She said she was allowed no notes, she was allowed no staff, she wasn't allowed to discuss them with anyone, and that, in fact, they told her that at this time it was the terrorist surveillance program. They told her that it was yielding impressive results. She points out in her article there were no Justice Department officials in the room, and that she, in hindsight, should have realized that was a real problem, and later on learned that not only was the program illegal and that it was beyond the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which is the exclusive way you're supposed to do this under Congress, but also that it hadn't yielded impressive results. In fact, the results had been quite meager. Was there something that she did wrong in 03 to 06, or is there something that, the government was doing wrong, or both?
Now you've raised still another important area. So let me address a little bit more of your first question,
okay,
then come on to the second question. They're certainly related. But there's a lot to talk about with each.
Okay.
Although, as you point out, the content of the briefings that have been given to me under classification, I'm sworn not to discuss.
Right, and I'm not asking about the content.
But let me just say, first, turning to the Panetta briefing to Congress, a month or two ago.
Okay.
Indeed, he said that he was notifying us of something that he had just learned about. Now, remember, he'd already been on the job for 5 months, 4 months, something like that. And this was something that he felt the CIA was and had been obligated to keep Congress fully and currently informed about, and which they had not kept Congress fully and currently informed about. It was a program that he said he was discontinuing. That much he has said in public, and I can't talk about the content of that briefing. However, so Some of us wrote a letter to him at that point and said, in light of what you have told us now, we hope that you will issue a correction to your public statement of a month before when you said it is not the practice or the policy to deceive Congress, because it clearly had been the policy, probably directed from very high up, certainly carried out by the high, at the highest levels of the CIA, not to brief Congress. So that has led to something of a, I guess you'd call it a tiff or a back and forth in the in the press, and with another article recently by the director of CIA, and we never took an accusatory tone of him. We thanked him for briefing us promptly. Promptly on when he learned about it, but certainly not promptly in when history is understood. It went on for many years.
Well, and also it's strange that they didn't inform him for 4 months. I mean, he came into office in February.
Again, this is just
he's supposed to be in charge.
This is the point I'm leading up to, and that is that unexamined behavior can get anyone into real trouble. The CIA should not want unexamined behavior, and yet their culture of concealment is so great that evidently they were not even briefing their own director about this, and it for months, and not and deliberately not briefing Congress for years. I mean, that's just dangerous. It's also, I think, against the law. And it is guaranteed to enrage members of Congress, not because we want to be in the know, but not because we want to be let in on the secret. It's because we have a sworn responsibility to the people who have sent us to Washington to look after their national security, to make sure that we get intelligence that saves lives and prevents wars and supports our men and women who are, well, to use the cliche, in harm's way. And so we, many of us, are sensitive to the fact that Congress has not done a good job over the years of exerting oversight over the intelligence community, not just the CIA, but certainly among the agencies, including the CIA. And so we're very sensitive about that. And when we are deliberately denied the information that is necessary for us to conduct oversight, or when, you know, little ruses and subterfuges are used, for example, Peter Hoekstra likes to say, this is the ranking Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, sometimes he, well, is apologizing for the intelligence community is keeping us in the dark, and sometimes he is railing against it. depends on
what day,
on
I suppose.
The day, or whether his own constituents are affected. But in any case, he talks about this game of 20 questions that the intelligence community plays with us, where if we don't ask the exact right question, they won't tell us. And actually, sometimes, of course, even if we do ask the exact right question, they won't tell us.
Well, let me ask you, and this relates back to Congressman Harman's article, there's been some criticism of her, of Nancy Pelosi, of even Senator Rockefeller, who did his best in writing a handwritten objection to the program, famously because he wasn't even allowed to tell his own staff.
Right, and filed it in a safe in the Intelligence Committee room. So, in a sense, that saves face for him.
CYA, someone might call it.
But it doesn't really provide oversight. This is not, it is not set up in a way to provide oversight.
So what could they have done? What could Pelosi and Rockefeller and Harman have done? Let's say they objected to the program. What could they legally have done?
Well, they could have gone to President Bush.
that wasn't likely to get much
results.
A lot
of good that might have done. They could have gone public,
but that's illegal, right?
That would be against their own oath,
right,
and against House rules,
right?
They obviously could go to the directors of these agencies But they can't even go to other members of Congress. And, you know, they would have to be reading between the lines. I mean, I wasn't at the particular briefings that Jane Harman has talked about or that Speaker Nancy Pelosi has talked about. But I'm sure if it is like the briefings in which I have been present, you have to read between the lines. And then you might have an idea that there's something fishy, there's something not quite right about this, or something perhaps inconsistent with American values. But, you know, you'd like to talk with some other members and say, you know, does this sound to you like it sounds to me? Do I get this right? You know, if you can't talk to a soul, it makes it really hard. And so that's what I wanted to get back to. All of this, the existence of these committees, the existence of this, what's now known as the Gang of Eight, in other words, the senior members of Congress who are briefed on some of the most closely held.
Well, and I wanted to ask you about that, too, because
this all dates back to the Church Committee.
Because my understanding of the legislation, and you're the expert, not me, but I've looked through the law on this, and I didn't see anything about the Gang of Eight. Now, I may have missed something, but my understanding was that the full Intelligence Committee had to be notified. The Gang of Eight, of course, is just the leaders, the Democratic-Republican leaders of the House and the Senate, and the Democratic-Republican leaders of the Senate and House Intelligence Committee.
The requirement is that Congress be kept fully and currently informed. It does provide the option for the president of restricting the extent of the notification. Again, notification is the euphemism that they use for consultation, because they're not about to really consult Congress. They will perfunctorily notify Congress. So it has come to be known as the Gang of Eight, but you're right. The law which and the practice, which grew out of the Church Committee, which also, as you point out, gave rise to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and the creation of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and the corresponding Senate Committee, this was intended to not just put a leash around the intelligence community, but to set up an oversight mechanism so that these jaw-dropping, really horrendous activities that had been going on for years or decades before the mid-70s, when the Church Committee met, would not take place again. Well, the recommendations, the requirements, the procedures set out by the Church Committee have been eroded, ignored, or violated.
And that's the heart of my question. My understanding, and this is what I'd really like answer on the law, is there anything on the law that allows the restriction to the so-called Gang of Eight, or is the law, as I think it is, and I could be wrong on this, it says that Congress has to be informed, and specifically the full Intelligence Committee has to be informed?
No, it says Congress must be informed, and the president has the discretion of restricting the extent of that. So the
It doesn't say to what number?
So the CIA's notifying or the NSA's notifying of only a few members of Congress, they will say, and sometimes this is explicitly true, they are doing that at the direction of the president. Now, it does raise interesting questions. I mean, we learned from the report of the Inspectors General of Intelligence Communities a few weeks ago that it was counsel to the vice president who actually controlled access to this domestic surveillance interception of communications. And so I don't know where in the law the vice president, or even less, the vice president's
counsel, David Addington, you're referring to.
Yes, gets the authority to control this unless the president has explicitly delegated it to them, and I don't believe that was the case. I won't comment about the various other programs that the vice president controlled access to, except to raise the point that it is not just the intelligence community that is a problem here. The executive, other parts of the executive branch can be. a problem.
Yes. And of course, according to the Constitution, the vice president has very limited powers. He can break a tie in the Senate. He presides over the Senate. But there's certainly nothing in there about either commander-in-chief or intelligence capabilities. There has been some discussion that your House panel needs to subpoena former Vice President Dick Cheney, and I assume David Addington, his counsel as well, to tell us, or at least to tell you, perhaps in closed session, what exactly was going on here. Do you support that?
Well, I support getting to the bottom of this. Let's see if it's necessary to subpoena. Now, I should say, the Intelligence Committee, the HPSI as it's known, has formally announced that it will be conducting investigations. The investigations so far are fairly narrowly drawn. I'm hoping to broaden them. Just as the Church Committee began with a fairly narrow scope because there were some revelations about, I used the word a few minutes ago, jaw-dropping, the expression jaw-dropping, of assassinations and spying on Americans and some other things that might sound familiar to us now. And as they got into it, the scope of the Church Committee investigations broadened. I expect and hope that that will happen in this case. Now, I'm not sure that the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, well, I guess I'm sure at this point that the, what would you call it, the kind of the mentality of the committee is not likely to lead to something on the scale of the Church Committee. I hope we can get to that point, and I hope we can get to it soon, because the Church Committee was the first time in decades that anybody had looked at the way intelligence is done in America. And that's been more than three decades now. There has not been an examination on that scale since, and it is overdue. We need to take a good, hard, broad look at the way intelligence is done in America. And I mean all sorts of things. I mean counterterrorism programs that are kept secret from Congress, of course, but domestic surveillance and warrantless laptop searches of Americans at airports and innocent people on no-fly lists for years, treating Americans with suspicion first, dubious legal opinions to cover warrantless electronic surveillance, remote assassinations, detainees dying in our custody after torture, and kind of all of those things. And not everything I'm talking about is revelatory in the sense that it's a gotcha moment where we want to expose the excesses of the intelligence community. No, I mean, it is asking questions about, well, what should the balance be between collecting intelligence and covert action to affect world affairs.
Now, what you're saying makes a lot of sense, but you're up against an institutional barrier, and I'm not just talking about the Bush administration. Leon Panetta has famously said, well, horrible things were done in the past, but that's the past. We have stopped doing these things. We need to move forward, that it hurts the morale of people to talk about these past actions, and I have to think that if the director of the CIA is saying that kind of thing, that he's got some support from the president.
Well, I mean, to some extent, I hope we could I wouldn't say play down past offenses or transgressions, certainly not ignore them, but rather approach them in a way to learn from them, because they get at the heart of important questions about what is America. Should America treat its citizens or any group of citizens with suspicion first? I mean, the whole idea, I think, of our Constitution is because we are equal, no person is less equal than anyone else. No one will be regarded with suspicion without due process, without demonstrated probable cause. And that's one matter. In the international sphere, what does it mean to be America? Are we supposed to be overt or covert in our efforts to influence world affairs? If we are covert, should it be rare, occasional, or continual. We have certainly slipped without examination over the decades into continual. I think that is crying out for examination without necessarily recriminations.
So how does the Congress exercise oversight today under the law, and do you think the law needs to be changed to increase congressional powers of oversight?
Well, that's among the things we need to ask. Does the law need to be changed? I think there certainly is more oversight now than there was a few years ago. I think there's more now than there was before the Church Committee existed. But as I said, I think a lot of what the Church Committee put in place has eroded or been ignored or flagrantly violated. And so maybe that means the laws, whether those laws be FISA or the structure of the intelligence committees or the requirement to keep Congress fully and currently informed, whether those the existing language is sufficient, that we should be asking those questions.
Congressman, you say we have more openness now than we did a few years ago.
More oversight.
And I suspect that maybe you can either you could agree with this or you could decline to comment. Yeah. But I suspect this may be by the fact that we have a Democratic Congress now. We didn't a few years ago, and we have a Democratic president now. But my concern with the Obama administration not wanting to explore the past does not have to do with my lack of trust of that administration, but the fact that administrations change, control of Congress changes, and I would not want the question to be unexamined and then allow a different president, a different Congress, to repeat what happened a few years ago.
Well, I think you're right. These things should be beyond the politics of the day. As I say, they get at the heart of what it is to be America. Of course, you know, some of the matters have attracted more attention than some of the others. I mean, certainly the treatment of detainees and what constitutes torture and to what extent torture or even interrogation without torture should be conducted by the intelligence community and to what extent it should be conducted by the military. Those are questions that we launched into behaviors that might have been different if there had been more congressional oversight, better examination of the issues. It may be that on some of these there isn't a right answer, but you don't know if you don't even think about the question.
Well, let me give you a counter-argument. I often have Republicans on my show. I debate with them, and whenever I raise the question of congressional oversight of intelligence, my Republican guests invariably say something to the effect of, you can't trust Congress, that every time we have a secret program and more members of Congress are notified than the eight, it always becomes public. Even these things became public. You just can't trust Congress to avoid leaks. How do you respond to that kind of criticism?
Usually, in fact, the large majority of the times, leaks don't come from Congress. Ask any other reporter who covers national security and intelligence matters, ask them where they get the sources for their stories. I think they will tell you it's not usually Congress. It's usually not congressional sources. Take the case of this domestic surveillance that the president secretly authorized so that the CIA could start collecting the National Security Agency could start collecting communications. They were restricting it, Jane Harman has talked about this and others, to a very few people.
Right.
I was on the Intelligence Committee during part of that time, and I didn't know about it. In fact, I went to the NSA, had a personal meeting with the director of the NSA. I said, there's some suspicions out there that such and such is going on, and he denied it.
Wow. To your face.
To my face, and about a week later, the article in the New York Times by Risen and Company appeared, and I wrote was a blistering letter to him. And to this day, I have trouble trusting his word. The But the point is that this was known to a very few members of Congress and thousands of people in the executive branch.
Right, because members of Congress aren't even allowed to bring their staff in. I mean, one of the things that Congressman Harman pointed out was there were no Justice Department lawyers there. If she'd had a couple lawyers in the room, they perhaps could have examined it and said, hey, this doesn't apply under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
Some of the key people in the Department of Justice were denied access and knew nothing about this. In fact, some of the supervisors of the people who did know about it didn't know about it.
It all sounds pretty lawless.
And of course, Jane Harman and others did not learn that there was some difference of opinion in the Justice Department about the justification for this.
And there's been a tiff between Nancy Pelosi and the CIA with her saying, in effect, what you've said, that they were lied to, that they were deceived, Congress was deceived by the CIA, and then Republicans have been attacking her for making those comments.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not an attack on the conscientious, patriotic, really competent people in the intelligence community to say the CIA's reason for being is denial and deception. I mean, that's
right.
And unfortunately, that doesn't always stop at Capitol Hill.
One of the things that I said on my radio show when all this came out, and I'm just curious to hear your response on this, is that the only thing I could think that Nancy Pelosi could have done and stayed within the law would be to announce to the American people, I believe something unlawful is going on here. I am not allowed to talk about it. It would violate my oath. But I believe something extremely unlawful and wrong is going on here, and I would like more information on it, and I would like you to write the president and ask him to inform me all the details, because I'm not allowed to talk about them, but this could be some horrible stuff, and they're tying my hands. But I want to let you, the American people, know something lawless is going on.
Well,
could she have said that?
She probably could have said something like that. I mean, you know,
it's a risky move because she has
the CIA would have said, or the NSA would have said, or you know, anybody involved in such briefings would say, no, you're not even allowed to say that a briefing took place.
Oh my God!
But in fact, I'm sure she could have legally and without prosecution said something like that.
Is that what people have to say?
A lot of people would have said, "Gee, that sounds silly," and it would have been the stuff of talk show jokes.
Sure.
And probably wouldn't have gotten results. And so that's why I find this whole discussion about who knew what when a digression.
And yet when there's lawless stuff going on in the administration, other than bringing impeachment hearings, what else can Congress do legally? I mean, I gave the example of what I thought Nancy Pelosi could do, and I think you responded appropriately. How does Congress indeed take the reins and make sure that we, the people, are in charge and not a bunch of run-amuck Ollie North types?
Well, I mean, that's what the laws and regulations put in place after the Church Committee were supposed to take care of. And my point is, evidently, they haven't quite taken care of that. And so I believe we need a major commission. It could be a congressional committee. It could be an independent commission. The success of this depends not on whether it's congressional or extra congressional, but rather on who makes up the body and how good is the staff. That would determine whether it's successful or not, more than the details of the organization. But I think we need something like that.
Is it going to happen?
So that we can ask the big questions about the way intelligence is done in and by the United States.
Has Chairman Reyes of the Intelligence Committee, has he approved it? Is this going to happen?
No. So far, the Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee, to some extent the full committee, and to some extent the other subcommittees within the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, will be undertaking an investigation that's fairly limited in scope. Subcommittee Chair Jan Schakowsky will, I think, has said something about the scope, and I'm sure she will be saying more. The panel that I chair, the Select Intelligence Oversight Panel, has a rather small staff and can't by itself conduct major investigations, but we can lend our clout to ensuring that the House Intelligence Committee gets what it needs and goes about it in the right way. But so far the scope is too small. The public needs a broader and deeper look at this. For a while it looked like it was just going to be who briefed whom on one or two matters, or it looked like it would only be an examination of the treatment of detainees and whether we tortured or not. Those are, of course, important, but that's only part of what we need to look at.
So hypothetically, and you may not want to answer this, but I'm going to try, if you were to subpoena David Addington, say, the former counsel to the vice president, and he were to decline to attend on the grounds of executive privilege, do you think that he would have a case there, or do you think this is beyond executive privilege?
Well, I think he would have a case, but I'm not sure he would win. The Judiciary Committee, of course, issued subpoenas a year or so ago.
Karl Rove and Harriet Myers.
That's right. And although I guess it hasn't happened yet, it looks like the Judiciary Committee is in the right there.
A lower court has so ruled. It hasn't gone higher than that.
So anyway, these are tough issues. And the reason I didn't have a quick and easy answer to how we handle this is there are legitimate issues of separation of powers. The president does have an authority as commander-in-chief. And some of these agencies, the NSA, for example, are actually arms of the Pentagon. So it's not a simple matter of how you conduct oversight, how you demand and require compliance.
Let me ask you briefly about the third branch and specifically how the administration protects secrets there. There's something called the state secrets privilege, which I think has grown up organically over time. Few Americans would doubt the need of the government to protect things like the names of secret agents or specific times and dates of plans. But there's been a suggestion in academic communities that state secrets has been used more to protect the United States from embarrassment than actually protecting our security. I wonder if you'd comment on that.
I think that's true. I actually think that the covert actions, which are permitted under law, with presidential directive, so-called presidential finding, have been delegated to the CIA. In most cases, those activities, which are intended to keep U.S. fingerprints off of activities intended to affect world affairs, those are conducted more for... those are covert, more for reasons. What would you say? I wouldn't say
bad.
Protect.
Bad public relations.
Yes. It's not just to protect and to prevent embarrassment, but it is not for what I would call, in many cases, good security reasons.
Is it fair to do a covert operation?
I've asked the CIA, by the way, is to let me know what, if any, covert actions over past decades have actually remained covert.
Yeah, when we bombed Cambodia, I think the Cambodians knew about it.
Right. And, well, of course, covert doesn't mean that the activity isn't known, but it is in no way associated with the United States. That's the difference between covert and clandestine. Clandestine means somebody sneaking in and sneaking out and maybe nobody will know about it. Covert actions are actions that are taking place. The actions are taking place, but the U.S. fingerprints are nowhere on it. Well, these things don't remain covert for very long. The CIA, by the way, has yet to answer my repeated questions show me any of the examples of covert action over past decades. that have actually remained covert.
That's one thing I've never understood. When Congress asks a branch of government something and they just don't answer your questions, I assume what you would have to do to get them, and again, I always think in legal ways, it's part of my sort of lawyer mind, is to have a full vote of the committee or maybe even Congress to order them to provide information. That's the only way?
It probably would require something like that.
Yikes.
And, you know, that's, you know, and particularly if the agency says, oh, this is national security, you know, some members of Congress will give them the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
Even some members of Congress who have sat on the committee with me and have witnessed this stonewalling and have been frustrated by it.
Congressman, before we go, is there anything else you're working on in intelligence you want to talk about?
Well, yeah, a couple of things. One is intelligence. The other is law enforcement with some overtones of intelligence. The first has to do with the interrogation and treatment of detainees. I've been arguing for some time that we should have video recording of all the interactions with detainees.
That makes sense. Local police officers are doing that now with some of their stops.
It is the standard all across the country for district attorneys, prosecutors, police. And at first, many of them resisted it and said, well, what's the matter? Don't you trust us to behave well in the interrogation room? And I said, that's not really the point. And in fact, the reason DAs and others accept this as the gold standard now is because they understand it's not about trust, but it's about conducting good interrogation.
It protects them too, right?
You know, the cameras in cop cars. At first, the police didn't want those, and now they realize it's their best friend.
It protects them. If they're following the law, then there's no problem.
And so I got into this, though, not because I necessarily suspected any misbehavior in the interrogation room, but I was asking an interrogator. This is years ago, in 2001, 2002, or 2003, sometime like that. I said, well, since you're interrogating people whose language we don't understand very well, how do you get the language experts to review the tapes and, you know, understand the nuances here? And they say, well, what tapes? Well, of course, we then learned the CIA was taping some of these interrogations, which they later destroyed.
Right.
And now the CIA says, oh, no, we couldn't possibly tape them. That would be, create all kinds of security problems. And yet we learned that they, you know, on their own had been taping them. But anyway, that's one thing I've been working on. It's in the authorization bill, the intelligence authorization bill that was passed out of committee that I hope will be passed in the House of Representatives and make it through the Senate soon. It's also, as it applies to military interrogations, it is also in the defense authorization bill.
Terrific.
The other thing I've been working on, trying to get an investigative commission of the bioterrorism attack on the United States, the only known bioterrorism attack, and that is the anthrax letters back in 2001. It turns out that was a very important event because coming right on the heels of the terrorist attacks of September 11th, the anthrax killings convinced Americans that the terrorist network was everywhere,
right,
that it was even in our midst, would use every possible way to get at us.
It caused real terror.
Even our mail.
Right.
And I actually think that our response, the American response to the terrorist threat, was greatly influenced, more than we actually realize, bioterrorism attack.
Does that make you think that it was more than this one guy,
lone wolf? I'm not saying that it was, but our initial thought, Americans all across the country, thought that this was associated, you know, with the international terrorist network.
Right.
Now, the FBI claims that they eliminated any possibility of an international link here. I have not been satisfied that they have done so, but I'm not claiming that there is an international link. My whole point is I think this investigation was botched from the beginning, right through the end, and I have little confidence that the case is ready to be closed. Now, I'm not saying that Ivan's, this researcher who worked for the government, wasn't the culprit. He might have been. But so far, they have only circumstantial evidence tying him to it. They say they can trace the anthrax to a vial in his lab, to a flask, a beaker in his lab. Fine, maybe that's correct. Maybe they used good procedure there. But this was only after they were absolutely sure that it was another guy.
Right.
And they were so sure it was the other guy that they eventually had to pay him $6 million.
Right, they accused him publicly.
For false accusation. I watched them take a look at, I watched them conduct their investigation. And, you know, we all quickly learned that the anthrax-laden letters went through a Hamilton, New Jersey mail sorting facility. In other words, this mail passed through my district in New Jersey. So I have a real visceral interest in this, and my constituents do.
Did anybody die?
Yes.
In your district?
Not actually, not people who live in the 12th Congressional District, but, you know, certainly people around the country, people who worked for the Postal Service.
Right, now that I know.
So forth.
Right.
As well as civilians. Once you knew that these letters went through the Hamilton sorting facility, any investigator, or in fact any fifth grader, would say, okay, next step, figure out how they got there.
Sure.
And there are a countable number of mailboxes and substations that feed mail into the Hamilton sorting facility. You would think by the next weekend...
They'd know which mailbox it was.
They would have, you know, swabbed, they would have taken a microbiological wipe to every, you know, every mailbox and so forth. When did they do it? The following July. Remember, this happened September, October. The following July, they found a contaminated mailbox on Nassau Street in Princeton, New Jersey, and they began asking passersby if anybody remembered anything strange happening at that postbox the previous fall.
That's terrible.
Those are our Keystone Cop investigators at work. And so, you know, then you, with one, you know, they drained this lake in Frederick, Maryland, and because they were sure there was a hood glove box there. Anyway, my whole point is they now claim complete assurance that they've got the right guy. There's no physical evidence that connects him with the letters, no contamination of his person, his house, his car, nobody who saw him mailing the letters or... it's all circumstantial.
And it's convenient because he's dead.
It's a psychological profile of the person who would do it. And indeed, this man seems to have been an oddball.
And he's dead, so it's convenient, right?
But that doesn't, and he, yes.
I mean, you can't ask him any questions now.
So, you know, so for the sake of understanding what happened, for the sake of reassuring people that there isn't still a murderer at large, for the sake of helping us make sure that our investigative services work better next time, and to make sure that we're prepared for the next bioterrorism attack, I think we need a major investigation so we will learn the lessons that we should learn about how unprepared we were, unprepared from the point of view of public health and also unprepared from the point of view of forensic investigation. So that's something else I'm working on.
And I'd be happy
to keep you up on that.
I appreciate that very much. It seems to me that we even need maybe even a broader investigation on just which people are being hired by the CIA and the FBI. You've got CIA agents that have lied to you, including the head of the NSA, including the example you gave about people denying there were videotapes. You have FBI agents acting like the Keystone Cops. I recently, and I'll be happy to send you this, I did an article on an FBI cover-up of a white supremacist Islamic terrorist alliance that Senator Grassley was exploring. Why are we getting these substandard people here? Are they not following the law?
I won't get into that. Some of them are quite good.
Yes, some of them are quite good, but it seems to me there's a culture of not obeying the law that I think is endemic and a real problem in a lot of these organizations. Well, Congressman Rushhold, I got to tell you, I really appreciate all the work you're doing. I've asked you some tough questions, and I think you've given some great answers. You are one of the few out there that are really a voice for those of us that aren't against necessarily covert activity. I certainly would love to see...
Yeah, wouldn't you like your government to keep you safe?
Exactly. I mean, I want al-Qaeda members assassinated, but I want to do it legally. Does anyone believe in the rule of law anymore? Clearly you do. And just before you go, I'm going to switch topics entirely because the thing that I think you're most known for and that I've been praising you for the last 5 years I've been on radio is protection of voters' rights. Particularly, you've been sponsoring a bill to require a paper ballot for a very long period of time that I've been a big fan of. States have largely, many of them, have come to do what you say they should do, which is a paper record to prevent machines from miscounting votes. And some people think that's one of the reasons why Obama could win the election in 2008. How's that going, that bill?
As you point out, our efforts in Congress have been slow to bear fruit, but they are bearing fruit in an indirect way in that many counties and states, following, I think, our call, have made the decision themselves to move toward verifiable, audited voting. Now, you know, voting should be reliable. It should be accessible to all people, all legitimate voters. But it also should be verifiable, and it should be audited. The only person who can verify the vote that your vote is recorded properly is you. No machine manufacturer or no vendor or no election official can verify that your vote is recorded properly because it's a secret ballot. Only you can do that. Well, the only way you or any other voter in practice can do it is not electronically, but with hard copy. To be able to say, this is recorded the way I want it. In other words, paper ballots. And in order for a system to work reliably, it should be audited. And so there should be, in every federal election, and probably every local election too, although we have no jurisdiction over that, there should be an audit, a random, statistically significant sample that will the most obvious way is using a hand count of paper ballots. Make sure that any electronic counting of those ballots works. Make sure that the handling of those ballots has been secure. And we've come a long way
since 2000, right? Since the Florida debacle, I believe a majority of states now have this. Is that right? A majority?
Yeah, about a third in the most recent election. About a third of Americans were still voting in an unverifiable way.
Okay, so two thirds down, one third to go.
Roughly speaking, yeah.
Okay. Thank you again,
Thanks
Congressman.
Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Bye. Wow, what can I say? Well, I think this is a man who truly knows his work. Knows what he's talking about. It's nice, like as I said at the beginning, to have an intelligent member of Congress and someone who's working so hard on our behalf, whether it's overseeing intelligence, protecting our right to vote, or simply checking up on the anthrax investigation. Congressman Holt is always welcome here on the Inside Scoop. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have comments on today's show, please leave them on the web at radioinsidescoop.com. This is Mark Levine, signing off.